Now we turn our attention, because now March is Women's History Month, and they're having a special event at the Enoch Pratt Library this weekend, which we'll be talking about, and we are joined here by Sujata Massey in studio. She, her R.E.I. Shimura Mystery Series won the Agatha and McCavity Awards. She's been nominated for Edgar, Anthony, and Mary Higgins Clark Awards. She's been a guest on the show several times for her previous books. Her newest novel is The Sleeping Dictionary, and it's the first in a series of historical suspense novels featuring a Bengali woman who each play a role in making modern India, and with Deborah Johnson, who's coming to Baltimore. Her book, The Secret of Magic, my wife Valerie read and just completely fell in love with and said, you have to have this woman on your show. And then we found out she was coming to Baltimore, so this may be our first talk with her. She's author also of The Air Between Us, which received the Mississippi Library Association Award for Fiction. As I said, the new novel is The Secret of Magic, which was set in 1946 and is about a young attorney from the Legal Defense Fund going from New York City to the deep south of Mississippi to find justice for a man who has killed a returning war veteran. And Deborah Johnson and Sujata Massey, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having me.
So you both are extraordinary writers, and it's great to have you both here. And let our listeners join us if they want to at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages or tweet us at Mark Steiner. 410-319-8888 is the number here. So the panel you're about to do coming up this weekend, before we talk about your novels, and I do want to get into novels a little bit specifically, but we'll have you both back individually just to talk about your work, because people need to hear about the depth of the stories that you write. This is a very special genre to me, and the idea of taking a piece of history and then creating a world out of it for us to find a culture that's gone before us, especially through the eyes of women, which you don't always hear. Maybe it's happening more and more. But Deborah Johnson, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I was very happy to do this. It was something I'd been thinking about for quite a while because I really loved Constance Baker Motley. I loved the work of the Legal Defense Fund. And so the idea of bringing that world alive again, the beginnings of the civil rights movement right after the Second World War, was very, very appealing to me. I really wanted to show this to people, and you can do that, I think, effectively with fiction, because you can bring a person's feelings into it much more and their discernment into it much more so.
And I get, go ahead, Sujata. Your thoughts as well. I have another question, but
yeah, I think that historical fiction really is a way to just kind of wake up and actually get into history. I know that when I work with my kids, they're really unhappy reading just history books. And I feel like if we only had more stories about people in the past, that just, you know, through people's lives, understanding what a political movement meant or what oppression really was, then it would really change people's feelings about history. So even though I write for entertainment purposes, I think that there's something deeper going on.
Well, that's it. I think that's what you get from both of your books is that and anybody who writes historical fiction in a really serious and powerful way is that you have to first, as the author, subsume yourself into that period of time, become part of it. In some ways, Deborah, like an actor becomes part of a character, to kind of feel what happened then and share it.
Oh, absolutely. I was like, everything I was doing, I was even signing checks, 1946. You're like so deep into that world that you come out and you just have to blink a little bit at modern things, modern cars on the street, or, you know, reading things on the internet and not a newspaper, just everything about it. It just really takes you over, as it should. I mean, you get so involved. I love this period, so I was happy to get involved in it and happy to be able to bring a little bit of life to it, I think.
One of the things that I did, because I was writing about India in the 1930s and 40s, was I traveled to India and I found this obscure reading room in Calcutta. And, you know, it was literally an open air reading room with no air conditioning, but they had newspapers going back 100 years. And I was able to go in there and open up these newspapers that were unfortunately crumbling. and read these old advertisements for cosmetics and food and columns, you know, written by people. And that was a way of really getting the news that didn't make it into the history books, you know, sort of very partisan views and very things that might seem really silly to a historian, but are really fascinating to a writer who's trying to paint a picture of a young woman living in the 1930s.
You know, people say that you're supposed to write from what you know, or what you experience, and who you are in some ways. People say that all often when it comes to how people approach their writing. And both of you, in some senses, did this and expanded into a different world. I mean, which I was really excited about when thinking about the two of your books, and you're both joining us today for this. And because, I mean, Deborah, your character who was killed, Joe Howard Wilson. Your father's name is Joe Howard, also a World War II returning vet, African-American fighting in the World War II, coming back, and Mississippi was part of this. But then you were able to take that personal piece and turn it into this story, which has to do with all of our stories and the complexity of the South.
Right.
Right?
Thank you. Yes, thank you for saying that, because that's what I wanted to do. I really wanted to show. It's so hard when you read the history books, because I grew up in the civil rights era, and I grew up in the Middle West, but I had an idea of what Mississippi was. And when I actually moved here about 10 years ago, I realized it could not possibly have been exactly the way that I thought it was when I was growing up. It couldn't have. It just could not have been because of just the geography and just the people. It doesn't mean that the history wasn't correct, but there was a personal element to the history, too, that I sort of wanted to catch, and it's a little bit more complexity.
I mean, and I think you did that. I think that's the kind of found so interesting, and Sujata, with you, I mean, that part of your heritage in life is that world, right?
Yeah. By blood, I'm half Indian, and my father is from this the city of Calcutta, where there has been a tremendous political unrest for centuries. And, you know, I've always wanted to live there, but I haven't been able to. I've been able to visit and visit and visit. So working on this book brought me closer to learning things about my own past that I didn't know. And I spent many wonderful afternoons with my father just going over little things like translations of Bengali proverbs that I was able to work into the book and understanding more about the language. And then it brought back memories for him. Like, he had almost forgotten that the British had bombed the Japanese had bombed Calcutta during the British rule when he was a little boy, and he ran from those bombs, and he was suddenly remembering that for me. And it was wonderful for my book, but, you know, even more wonderful for me as a family member to have that story about him.
And your sojourn, Deborah, and when we come back from this break, we're going to talk a bit more about your books as well and what you all might get into on Saturday. Because your sojourn took you from Italy, where you lived for all these years,
right,
as a writer in exile, half joking, to Mississippi.
Right. But when I first moved here, I loved living in Rome, and I still love going back there. And I've loved all the places that I lived. And I lived in Italy, actually, for quite a while. But when I moved to Mississippi, there was something sort of very, I just felt immediately at home, and that this was the place for me. And I had ideas for this book and the one that preceded it already. But when I placed them here, they took on a bit more resonance, even in my own mind, and I was able to move forward. It's just a very, very complex state.
We're going to have a very brief break and come right back with our two guests, Sujata Massey and Deborah Johnson, who you just heard, talking about this event coming up Saturday at the Enoch Pratt Library, and their books, The Sleeping Dictionary, Sujata wrote, and Deborah Johnson's book, The Secret of Magic. I promise we'll have both these women back on in the coming month just to talk about their books alone, because you need to hear about these books. We're going to go out with Little West Montgomery, because he was born on this day in 1923, and one of the best songs he ever did, Round Midnight.
Baby, now, my
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. That's Baby Love by the Supremes, because Mary Wilson of the Supremes was born on this day in 1944, and so we celebrate her birthday with a little of her music. And we're here with Deborah Johnson, who's the author. Her latest book is The Secret of Magic, set in 1946, and Sujata Massey's latest book, The Sleeping Dictionary, set in Bengal in India in the 30s and 40s as well. And you can join us here at 410-319-8888, but you can meet these women and others this Saturday at 1 p.m. at the Enoch Pratt Free Library as part of International Women's History Month Literary Festival. And you can go to prattlibrary.org or steinershow.org, get more information. They'll be there with other authors having a ranging discussion about place, time, culture, literature, and women's lives and literature and women writing. So it should be an incredible discussion. You should join them, but you can join them here now as we talk to them about their work. Sujata, you had a question for Deborah.
Deborah, I have a question for you. I'm so intrigued that you were in Italy for 18 or more years, and I wonder if coming back from a place like that, does that make you look at the United States differently, and did that shape writing this book for you?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, a very good question, in the sense that when I left for, I actually lived in Rome for about 18 years. I was back and forth, but essentially the United States sort of stopped its history at the time that I went, so that in my mind, so that when I came back, I was able to view it in a really, I believe, a fresh way. And I had never actually been to Mississippi before, so I was able to see that, I think, with a different eye than perhaps I would have had I grown up here, because there are a lot of things I would have just taken for granted, I think, that were quite surprising to me coming back. I mean, I was back and forth all the time while I lived in Italy, but still living here again was, you know, it was wonderful because this is my country, but it was also, I could step back from it a little bit.
You know, I let me probe a little bit about both your books here for a second. I want people to get a sense of that and then come back to a subject that may come up on Saturday with you all. And Deborah, this book, I mean, the story you're telling is about a young woman, Regina, or as they want to say, as very in the South, Regina, who goes back to Mississippi working with the Legal Defense Fund to uncover this murder, and then is wrapped up in this children's book that she fell in love with as a child because about an international group of kids. It was banned. The book was banned in the South, but the authors involved, M.P. Calhoun. And to tell us a bit on that, I mean, you really kind of want to begin this complex, complex story that kind of weaves in and out of the magic of this mysterious forest, what goes on in there, as well as the mystery. So, I mean, you really kind of played with this in some profound ways.
Thank you for saying that. I was really struck when I came here. Now, I can't speak for all towns, but my town is a sort of a mid-sized town. And I was struck by the fact that many African Americans and whites told me that as children, they played together, which is not the idea that you get, you know, outside of the South, that they would, like, play together on the plantations or the farms or in the small towns and stuff. And at a certain age, usually before puberty, they went their separate directions.
Right.
And many of them thought, had people come up to me, whites especially, and said, you know, I never even questioned that this was wrong. And these were people who I really like, and I really believe that they never questioned this, that they never questioned the fact that blacks went to certain schools and whites went to another when they were children. So this really interested me, and I wanted to explore that a little bit.
And kind of the surrealism of magic interests you, too, as well.
Right, you know, what exactly it is and how exactly it functions and, you know, how people can be taken in by it, by like a glamour, you know, and look in the wrong direction for the answers.
And, you know, Sujata, when I was thinking about this, the book that Deborah wrote and the book that you wrote, one of the things that ties them together for me is you're exploring the clash of culture, the clash of nations, and almost in the midst of it, the creation both in the South and in India of a new culture through the eyes of women because of what women had to go through.
Yeah, women were big workers in the freedom movement in India. And
we didn't have, this is something, just like Deborah was talking about, what's not covered in the South in our history there, we don't know it, and this is a way to know our history in a creative way. What you uncover in this book is this question of women that we don't know. Nobody, you hear Gandhi, you hear Nehru, you don't hear stories about women in this struggle at all.
Yeah, what has been documented is in these tiny little memoirs here and there, and also maybe a historian has written something about it, but it's not widely known that women actually wore military uniforms, Indian women, and were trained in combat against the British in an attempt to take back India. You know, not that it succeeded. But that, you know, that was the ultimate expression, you know, that so much was going on. There was such a big student movement. And it's quite easy to, you know, find even older people that remember these things and people who had been in prison, just like they were in prison here in the civil rights movement in the 50s and the 40s even. But they were really, this was going on in India, you know, in the teens and the 20s and the 30s. So it was very exciting for me to find these stories and to weave them into, you know, a narrative that's not a polemic or anything, but explaining how it was to be a young woman and the choices that you might make in these days.
And that, again, is this, Deborah, is this notion of this idea that's coming out because of the writers that are coming to the fore now, like you and Sujata, who are bringing it through the eyes of women in a different period of time. And I think this idea of bringing it through the eyes of women is a very powerful piece that we've left out and can really begin to open up in a popular way what we think of who we are and what our history was.
Exactly, because in the book, it's Regina Robichaud, who is the lawyer who comes down, has been so touched by the white writer Mary Pickett Calhoun's book. She had been so touched by this when she was young that it was actually part of the reason that she went into the law, was because of this book written by this white woman,
right,
20 years before.
So, I mean, so what do you think this is doing? What do you think ultimately, I'm just curious, you both think, this historical fiction, taking a piece of history and bringing it to life, because, I mean, I love history. I read it all the time. But there's something about historical fiction that allows you to go into a time through the feelings of people who are actually there. Just what might it have been like? But doing it now more and more, so more and more of the books I see written are written by women. And I wonder what you think this role has in terms of our future and how we think about what our world was and where we could be going. I'll just end with this. I mean, there's one of my favorite Orwell quotes I say all the time is that he used the word he, but I will say they. They who control the past control the future. They who control the present control the past. I love that quote by Orwell. And that's what you all are in the middle of, Deborah.
Yes, because I think it really is important to get the idea. This was a time in the United States where the war had ended and women were supposedly moving into the 1950s mode where, you know, they were supposed to be going back home. And as I say in the book, they were supposed to be giving up their jobs that a family man, a man could take that who had to support a family. And so it was important for me to note that not all women did this, that this book is based, the protagonist in this book is based on Constance Baker Motley, who graduated Columbia Law School in, I think, 1946, but she graduated with a whole generation of fabulous female lawyers, including Bella Abzug.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is important, I think, to really realize that women continue to work and they continue to make contributions outside of the home, even as they were being pushed into a role. I think that historical fiction can show that.
I think it can. I think it does it better than actually sometimes reading the kind of historical books we're forced to read, or that I love to read, I should say.
One of the exciting things for me has been a number of very young people contributing historical and autobiographical accounts. Like, for example, this girl, Malala in Pakistan, who was blinded. I read her book, and, you know, she wrote that book as a teenager, and there are books by child soldiers in Congo and other African countries. And so I feel like we're hearing voices from all over the world of not just necessarily a female person, but a male person and a young person and someone disenfranchised. And I think that a lot of these people may be our next novelists, and they know the stories about their families. You know, we may be seeing things like that. But I think growing out of these small accounts of things going on now, you know, there is a lot more material coming to all kinds of people to write about. And that's really exciting for me.
I mean, one of the things that made me think about is this, you know, when you look at 12 Years a Slave, the movie that just came out and won Best Picture, which was great, but built on Solomon Northrop's book. And I started reading about more books about from the 19th century. And there's a connection here between what you all are doing now in this century and what happened in the 19th century. Is I didn't realize until reading some of the accounts, and I just read last night an 1853 New York Times article that a friend sent me on the book, 12 Years a Slave, that they wrote about in the New York Times 1853.
Wonderful.
And what I discovered was what the powerful of the effect that slave narratives and written by men and women who ran away to be free wrote about slavery. That began to change the consciousness of somebody, some group of white people in America and in Europe about what slavery was and about black people. And I didn't realize the power of that until just recently. And so I'm curious what you think about the power of what you all are doing and what other women now are doing in writing these stories and what they might be saying that we're not seeing because we're not looking back at it. We're in it.
I hope it's powerful. I don't know. I know I'm really enjoying it. It's really exciting for me. You know, like, for example, the next book I'm writing, which is set in the 20s, and there's definitely going to be some unrest in there. And I found out about a political movement which was against the Brahmins, the top of the, you know, the Hindu heap in India, that I had never heard anything about before. And I'm very excited to learn more about that and work that in. I don't know if it's necessarily, you know, I can't see the power because I'm writing.
Because you're in it.
Because
right.
It's a story. I mean, I think we have to write stories that really touch us and that move us. And we write these stories because we have to write them. I don't know if that's how you felt, Deborah, that like this story just reached out and grabbed you and you had no choice but to write it.
Well, that's sort of how I feel, too. It's like it was, I don't know quite, but it was like a back thread on a tapestry or something. And as you pay more attention, or the background of a photograph or a painting, and as you pay more attention to it, it comes out and takes on form and color. And that's sort of what this did to me. I knew that I wanted to write this time period. My grandfather was in the war during, in a segregated, he had fought in Europe in a segregated army for freedom from the Nazis and the Germans and the fascists. And so I knew I wanted to tell this story because he was such a patriot when he didn't really effectively have the right to vote in his own state. So, but as I got more deeply into it, more and more things came out, and I just got more and more proud of the people who had stood up at that time, and I really wanted to tell their story, black and white. I wanted to tell their story because it gets a little bit lost in history, I think.
And it's interesting, as a black woman writing this book about the South is, and other people have been doing this. I've been reading lately. I think it's a really important change. Is searching for the humanity, giving us the power of the ugliness and the oppression and what people went through to survive in the South in the 40s, what that world was like, the horrendous nature, but also painting people in a very humane way, no matter whether white or black. I think that was a really interesting piece, the way you approached this as well.
Thank you. The thing I remember when I was doing my research, I was reading about Medgar Evers.
Uh-huh.
And he grew up in a small town of Mississippi, much like Revere in my book. And he came back from the war, and he was determined to vote. You know, I mean, he came back from fighting, too, and he was
right.
determined to vote. And he would go to the courthouse, but there would be armed men, and they would, like, you know, go with shotguns and rifles parading around the courthouse to stop him from going there. And the thing that was so poignant about it was that he said he knew these men. He'd grown up with them. They'd hunted and fished together when they were little. And so that is part of the South, I think, that needs to be shown a little bit more.
You know, and I think in the same ways, in some ways, Sujata, with your no-name character, your multi-name character, Palm. and that's a whole story
I'm
in
glad
itself.
Glad you remembered that name. That's the first name she has.
That's the first
has.
Name in the book, right?
Uh-huh.
And how she changes cast, character, mm-hmm. wherever she happens to be. But that in itself, you started also dealing with all these cultures that could be just seen as completely oppressive, and there clearly was oppression, but also in their humanity.
Yeah, there
she
was
wanders through
a real, a really complicated relationship between Britain and India that stretches almost 400 years. And, you know, curry is the national dish of England, so
right.
it's today. So,
and where did that come from?
A lot of British right. people feel India, that they almost feel Indian, you know. And they used to call British people who were born in India Anglo-Indians. So there were all kinds of relationships between Indians and British people. They weren't all nasty. There were love relationships, there were friendships, there were intellectual relationships, and there was a lot of sudden awareness, especially during the 40s, that things were going wrong, that the British started to kind of wake up to the fact that decisions they had made had caused a famine in a state.
Right.
So, it was a very intense time, and I want to capture that. You know, there's so many books where the British are the villains, or the British are cool and the Indians are servants who don't know anything. And my goal was to write a book that kind of showed both people realistically, and that they're all different kinds of people within a national realm.
I think thinking about the two of you coming on today, the connections just began to kind of slowly pour together between the kind of things you touched on, very different worlds and cultures you both touched on. India, Mississippi, but there's so many connections given oppression, colonialism, racism, how all those things fit in, and how they fit into making this kind of new world as well. I mean, you get a sense from when you write the way the two of you write that in order, let me just say it this way, that Ho Chi Minh had this poem, and the last lines of his poem were, "You have to walk through the cold and desolation of winter before you can feel the warmth and beauty of spring." And I think about that in terms of the world you two write about, because that's what they did.
Yeah, I think that in a lot of historical novels, there's going to be hardship. There definitely is, before you get at a truth or something, some bit of hope. So, you know, people probably are prepared for that, but hopefully not scared by it.
Is there a final thought from you?
Yeah, it's because that's life. You know, I mean, it's very easy to have one group of people as all bad and one group of people as all good, but it takes away their humanity a little bit. And so when you do that, a little bit, a lot, and when you do that, you always have the other. And that's what I sort of wanted to address in my book.
Well, there's so much more I could talk to the two of you about, and we'll do that another time. And Deborah Johnson, we'll look forward to meeting when you come to Baltimore this weekend. And
it's 1:00 on Saturday.
1:00 Saturday. That's, yeah.
Yep,
that's
right. Deborah, I'm really looking forward to meeting you and getting a book signed.
I am too. Thank you so much for this. I really, really am looking forward to meeting you.
So it's this Saturday, 1 p.m., the Enoch Pratt Free Library. It's part of the International Women's History Month Literary Festival at the Enoch Pratt. You can go to prattlibrary.org or steinershow.org for more information. You want to meet these two incredible women, Sujata Massey, her book, The Sleeping Dictionary, Deborah Johnson, her latest book, The Secret of Magic. And we will have them both back on one-on-one to explore in more depth the books that they've written, because you need to hear the entire story. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Meet them Saturday. Be there. And we're going to go out. Quick break here with the I'm Outstanding, Shaquille O'Neal, born on this day in 1972. Can rap and play ball. We'll be right back. Stay with us as we talk to Baynard Woods, senior editor of the City Paper.
Times are rough. Didn't have toys or rush toys, but I had enough. Love, that's the guidance from above. To go to the box, sweat, push and shove. Made it in before dark, like you told me. Didn't do it a few times, the band had to scold me. Pray for my safety. I know how you was feeling. Didn't want me reeling. I get to drug dealing. Remember when you asked me this one day. Who I want to be, like I said, Dr. J. Yeah, good.